You probably use ChatGPT or like Claude Code or Cursor pretty much every single day. If you're anything like me, you definitely have a morning routine. You fire up your IDE, you grab your coffee, you type a prompt into the chat window, and then you just sort of sit back and watch.
Yeah, you just let it do its thing.
Right. The AI just seemingly magically reads your files, figures out the whole architecture, writes a patch, runs your tests, and fixes that agonizing bug you were banging your head against the night before. But what is actually happening under the hood, it feels like pure magic, but the reality is much simpler and honestly far more fascinating. So welcome to the deep dive. Today we are looking at this incredible stack of sources. We've got deep dive architectural teardowns, official API documentation, and some really, really candid engineering blogs from Anthropic, OpenAI, LangChain, and Vercel.
It's a pretty remarkable collection of material to go through. We have everything from the raw telemetry data of millions of developer interactions to the exact, line by line edit strategies used by the top open source coding agents right now. It gives us this unprecedented look at how these systems actually function in the wild, like way beyond the marketing copy.
Exactly. And the mission for today's deep dive is to essentially peek inside the black box of these coding agents. We are going to strip away that illusion of magic and look at the actual source code, the raw mechanics, and the competing architectural philosophies of the tools you use daily.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because as a developer, you know what a large language model is. You know it is fundamentally a wildly sophisticated autocomplete. It's
Right.
just predicting the next token based on its training data. But predicting the next token is a purely text-based operation. How does generating text turn into navigating a complex file system or executing bash commands and literally rewriting a production code base? That is the core mystery we need to solve first. Because while the LLMs, the massive models like GPT-4 or Claude 3.5, they get all the hype and all the headlines, the real hero of AI coding is something most developers entirely ignore. It's a piece of software called the harness. And if we want to understand how any of this works, we really have to define the harness. The sources provide this brilliant analogy from the traditional computer systems world. Imagine a standard computer. If the LLM is the CPU-like, the raw cognitive capacity, the processing engine that crunches the numbers, and the context window is the RAM, the volatile working memory where info is held temporarily,
Right, yeah.
and then your file system or your database is the hard drive, well, then the harness is the operating system.
The operating system, that is a perfect analogy, because an OS manages resources. The CPU by itself is actually pretty helpless. It doesn't know how to draw a window on a screen. It doesn't know how to read a file from a spinning disk or an SSD. It really just executes mathematical instructions. The OS sits in the middle, translating those mathematical outputs into physical actions.
What's fascinating here is how literal that analogy becomes when you actually look at the architecture. The LLM cannot independently read your files. It cannot type on your keyboard. It has no physical or digital hands. It cannot execute a test suite. The harness manages everything the model cannot manage for itself. It decides which files to read. It decides when to clear out the memory because the context window is getting too full. It figures out how to apply edits safely without deleting your entire project, which is
Yeah,
important.
very important.
It decides when to pause and ask you for permission, and it figures out how to persist knowledge across different coding sessions. The harness is literally the difference between a smart chatbot that can reason about code conceptually in a browser and a virtual engineer that can change code reliably in your local environment.
And the big reveal here, looking at these architectural teardowns, is that the harness isn't some massive, incomprehensible neural network of its own. It's shockingly simple. Anthropic actually reports that Claude Code's core loop, the internal engine driving that entire experience that feels so magical and complex, is roughly 50 lines of code. 50 lines. I mean, I have written Webpack configuration files longer than that.
I think we all have. It sounds impossible until you break down what those 50 lines are actually doing. They implement what the industry calls a standard React loop. That stands for reason and act. It is essentially just a basic while true loop, a fundamental programming construct. The phases of the loop are incredibly straightforward: gather context, take action, verify results, and repeat. The model outputs text, the harness intercepts that text, looks for specific JSON instructions hidden within it, executes those instructions locally on your machine, and then feeds the terminal output back into the model's prompt to start the loop all over again.
Let's slow down and really look at that, because this is where the magic trick is totally exposed. It's just a loop interpreting JSON outputs to run local Python or JavaScript functions. The LLM doesn't have telepathic access to your code base. It's just outputting a JSON schema that says, hey, I want to use the read tool on the file named off.py.
Yes, this is the concept of tool calling, and it is the absolute bridge between the text generator and the real world. In the documentation for the Claude Agent SDK, we see exactly how this is wired up. Before the user even types a prompt, the harness secretly prepends a massive set of instructions to the LLM. It provides a description of the tools available. For instance, it might provide a JSON schema for a tool called Bash, explaining that this tool takes a string and runs it in the terminal. Or a tool called Edit, which takes a file path and a string replacement. When you, the user, type find and fix the bug in off.py, the LLM doesn't just magically output the fixed code. It outputs a structured JSON request to use the read tool on off.py.
And then the LLM literally stops generating. It just pauses. The harness, which is a regular program running locally on your machine, receives that JSON, parses it, opens off.py, reads the text, appends that text to the conversation history, and sends that updated history right back to the LLM as a new prompt.
And then the LLM wakes up again, reads the new prompt, which now includes the actual contents of off.py, finds the bug, and outputs another JSON block saying, use the edit tool to replace line 42. The harness intercepts that, executes the edit on your hard drive, and appends a success message. Then the LLM might output, use the bash tool to run NPM tests. The harness runs the test, captures the standard output and standard error from your terminal, and feeds it back. It is literally just a continuous, rapid-fire conversation between a text generator and a shell script.
It's just a continuous feedback loop. But looking at the sources, this is where the engineering gets incredibly delicate, because every time the loop repeats, the transcript of the conversation gets longer, and where the costs can spiral entirely out of control if you aren't careful. We really need to talk about the hidden metric that dictates the success or failure of a production stage AI agent, and that is the KV cache hit rate.
If we connect this to the bigger picture of AI economics, the KV cache hit rate is the single most important number a harness developer looks at. To understand why, we have to look at the ratio of inputs to outputs in an agentic workflow. When you're chatting with a normal AI chatbot on a website, you type a short prompt, maybe 20 words, and the AI generates a long essay, maybe 1,000 words. But with a coding agent, that dynamic is completely inverted. The agent is passing your entire file, the terminal output, the previous tool calls, the massive system prompt, and all the tool definitions back to the model over and over again. The sources note that in systems like Manus, the average input-to-output token ratio is around 100 to 1. The context grows massive with every single step, while the output, that JSON tool call, remains relatively short.
Right, because the LLM doesn't actually remember anything between API calls. It's totally stateless. So if the model has to reread my entire 5,000 DAS line off.ts file, plus the terminal output, plus the system prompt every single time it takes a step, you are sending hundreds of thousands of tokens to the API every few seconds. I'm just doing the math in my head right now. That sounds ruinously expensive. My API bill would be higher than my rent.
That was actually the primary bottleneck for early coding agents. The math simply did not work. You'd burn through $50 in API credits just trying to get an agent to center a div or refactor a single component. The industry was totally stuck until inference providers introduced and highly optimized KV caching.
I see KV caching mentioned all the time in model release notes and API dashboards, but how does it actually rescue us here? What is it doing under the hood?
Think of it as a massive temporary prefix saver. KV stands for key value. We have to remember that in an autoregressive model, which is what all these LLMs are predicting, the next word requires doing complex matrix math on every single word that came before it. It has to calculate the attention scores for how every token relates to every other token. But if the first 100,000 tokens of your work, prompt, your system instructions, your tool definitions, your unchanged code base, are perfectly identical to the prompt you sent 10 seconds ago during the last step of the loop, the API server recognizes that identical prefix. It completely bypasses the raw expensive computation and just pulls the pre-calculated mathematical states directly from its RAM.
Oh, wow. So the server basically says, I've already done the hard math on these 100,000 tokens. I'll just load the results. And I only pay full price for the net new text, the latest terminal error that just popped up at the very bottom of the prompt.
Exactly. The cost reduction is staggering when this works correctly. Looking at the pricing breakdowns and the sources for models like Claude 3.5 Sonnet, a cached input token is up to 90% cheaper than an uncached token. It is a 10x reduction in both cost and latency. Instead of waiting 20 seconds for the model to reread your code base, you wait 2 seconds. But here is the terrifying part for developers building these tools. That cache is incredibly fragile.
Fragile how? Like, if I change one variable name in my code, does the whole thing break?
It goes deeper than that. Due to the autoregressive nature of LLMs, the calculation of token number 50 is strictly dependent on token number 49. A single token difference invalidates the cache from that specific token onward. The sources point out a classic, almost tragic trap that developers fall into when building their own agents. Let's say you're building a custom terminal agent, and you decide it would be a really neat, helpful feature to put a live timestamp accurate to the second at the very top of the hidden system prompt. You think, oh, it will be useful for the AI to know the exact time so it can write better git commit messages.
Because it's at the top of the prompt and it changes every single second.
You destroy the cache entirely. Mm-hmm. By putting a live timestamp at the beginning, the prefix changes every single time the while true loop runs. The server looks at the prompt, sees the first few tokens are different because the seconds ticked over, and it throws away the entire KV cache. It recomputes all 100,000 tokens from scratch. Your latency spikes from 2 seconds to 20 seconds, and your API bill goes through the roof, all because you wanted the AI to know it was 2.04 p.m.
That is mind-blowing. It really highlights how building an AI tool is less about prompt engineering and more about context engineering at the most granular, ruthless level. The sources emphasize that you must keep your prompt prefix perfectly stable. Make your context append only. Only add new information to the very bottom of the prompt. Ensure your JSON serialization is perfectly deterministic. If a background library randomly reorders the keys in your JSON object between loop iterations, the string is different and the cache breaks silently.
It requires a level of strict determinism that is often uncomfortable for developers used to the fuzzy, forgiving nature of web development. You have to treat the prompt as an immutable ledger.
This brings me back to the daily developer experience, the whole reason we're doing this deep dive. The next time you are sitting there staring at your IDE and you see that little terminal spinner that says the agent is thinking, you now know exactly what's happening. It's not sitting in an armchair pondering the nature of your code. It's trapped in a while true loop. It just took an action, observed the bash terminal output, realized it made a syntax error, and it's furiously feeding that text back into its own prompt to try again, praying that it hits the KV cache so it doesn't bankrupt you.
That is the reality of the black box. It is a rapid, iterative, surprisingly mechanical cycle of taking an action and observing the environment. And because this core loop is so fundamentally simple, just passing text back and forth, the real differentiation between the tools on the market isn't the loop itself. It is how the harness decides to manage the environment around that loop.
Which brings us perfectly to the big debate. Because while the core loop is essentially the same everywhere, the architectural philosophies of how to wrap that loop, how to feed it context, are wildly different. Looking at the sources, we have three radically different bets taken by the top harnesses in the industry right now. We've got Claude Code, Open Code, and Aider. Smart engineers fiercely disagree about which approach is right, and you can feel the genuine tension between these approaches when you read their respective documentation.
Let's start with Anthropic's bet, which is Claude Code. Their philosophy is explicitly described as model as CEO.
Okay, let's unpack this. Model as CEO. That implies a hierarchy where the model is making the executive decisions and the harness is just an obedient assistant. What does that actually mean in practice?
It means they believe the frontier models are now intelligent enough to drive the entire exploratory process. The harness they built is deliberately thin and unobtrusive. Instead of building complex indexing systems, you give the model powerful generic Unix tools like ripgrep to search for strings across thousands of files, alls to list directories, and standard glob patterns, and you just get out of its way. Claude Code acts as a proactive planner. It doesn't rely on the harness to spoon-feed it relevant code. It uses its tools to actively scan the repository, read the files it thinks are relevant based on your prompt, and build its own mental model on the fly.
So it's literally like dropping a new senior developer into a massive undocumented code base on their first day, handing them a terminal and saying, figure it out.
Right.
You expect them to use grep and find to trace the execution path and locate where the authentication middleware lives.
That is the exact premise. But as any developer knows, dropping someone into a massive code base with only grep can lead to them getting hopelessly lost. The context window is limited. To maintain its understanding and prevent it from wandering in circles, Claude Code relies on a unique long-term memory strategy centered around a file called keylawude.md.
I've seen these files pop up in repositories recently. What is it actually doing?
Instead of trying to keep the entire architecture of the application in its volatile working memory, the context window, the agent is instructed to proactively write important project facts, architectural decisions, and coding conventions into this markdown file. It's like the CEO writing an executive summary. Whenever the context window starts to get full and needs to be cleared, the agent relies on this persistent Kalayu.md file to ground itself. It reads the file to remember, ah, right, we use functional components here, and the database connection is handled in the services folder.
That is incredibly autonomous. But let's contrast that with approach number two, open code. The sources describe their philosophy as the platform or the shell-first surgeon, and they take a much more controlled, interventionist approach.
Open code takes a fundamentally different path. Architecturally, it operates on a client-server model, which means it isn't just a simple command-line interface tool like Claude Code. It's a robust backend that can power a terminal, a VS Code extension, or a full web app. But the crucial philosophical difference is how it gathers context. Instead of telling the model to guess what to search for, using grep, which can be incredibly hit or miss, OpenCode heavily relies on a technology called LSP.
The Language Server Protocol. This is the hidden engine that powers almost every modern IDE, right?
Yes. For those who might not know the history, Microsoft developed LSP for VS Code. Before LSP, every editor had to write custom code to understand every programming language. LSP standardized this. When you are typing in your editor and you suddenly get those red squiggly lines under a variable that isn't defined, or an import that is missing, or a type mismatch warning that is the local LSP server analyzing your code's abstract syntax tree in real time and sending diagnostics back to your screen, OpenCode wires the LLM directly into this diagnostic system.
So how does OpenCode actually use LSP in the agent loop? Because the LLM isn't looking at a screen, it can't physically see the red squiggly lines.
It creates an automated diagnostic feedback loop. Imagine the LLM decides to write some code to fix a bug. It calls the edit tool and changes a file. In the Claude Code model, as CEO philosophy, the model would just assume the edit was fine, pat itself on the back, and move on, unless you explicitly instructed it to run a testing suite. But in OpenCode, the moment the edit is applied to the disk, the harness intercepts the changes and queries the local LSP server. The server instantly analyzes the new code and returns any syntax errors, undefined variables, or type mismatches.
So it translates the red squiggly lines into text.
Precisely. The harness captures those text diagnostics and feeds them directly back into the LLM's context window before the LLM is even allowed to take its next step.
That is incredible. The AI literally sees the syntax error and self-corrects before you, the human, even open the file to look at it. It's like having an automated, incredibly pedantic pair programmer instantly slapping the AI's wrist the millisecond it types a typo. Hey, you forgot to import use state.
It prevents what the industry calls error cascading.
Error cascading? What does that look like in an agent?
It's when an agent makes a tiny, seemingly innocuous mistake, like calling a function with two arguments when it requires three. Because it doesn't know it made a mistake, it assumes the code is correct. It then bases its next 20 edits across five different files on that faulty premise. By the time you try to run the code, it's a tangled mess of broken dependencies. OpenCode's philosophy is that you shouldn't rely solely on the model's fuzzy reasoning to catch bugs. You should rely on deterministic compiler feedback. You box the AI in with strict rules.
That makes total sense. If the compiler knows it's wrong, tell the AI immediately. But then we get to the third philosophy, which completely flips the table on both of them. Ader, the Git native pair programmer. And this one blew my mind, because looking at the architectural teardown, Ader doesn't use tool calling APIs at all.
That is a radical departure from the industry standard. Both Claude Code and OpenCode rely heavily on JSON tool calling, where the model outputs a structured JSON object asking the harness to perform actions. Ader strips that away entirely. The LLM simply outputs standard markdown text, and Ader's custom parser reads the text and applies the edits. But the most significant game-changing difference is how Ader handles context. It doesn't use grep to search, and it doesn't use LSP to validate. It uses something called a repo map.
The repo map trick. This is brilliant context engineering. The sources outline the core problem Ader was trying to solve. If you have a typical enterprise application, say the massive Java backend or a sprawling Next.js frontend, and you try to feed all 2,000 files into the context window, it could easily consume 1.2 million tokens. Even with KV caching, that costs an absolute fortune. But worse than the cost, it degrades the model's attention. The AI gets overwhelmed by the noise. It loses the forest for the trees because it's reading thousands of lines of boilerplate code. So what does Ader do instead?
Ader uses an incredibly sophisticated approach to map the architecture without reading the actual code logic. It uses an abstract syntax tree, or AST parser, called TreeSitter,
For the listener who hasn't built a compiler, what does TreeSitter actually do to the code?
TreeSitter reads your source code and breaks it down into a hierarchical tree of concepts. It doesn't see raw text. It sees that this block is a class definition. This block is a function inside that class. These are the parameters of the function, and these are the variables being returned. Ader uses this parser to extract the definitions of all the classes, functions, and variables across your entire code base. And crucially, it maps how they reference each other. It builds a massive dependency graph.
Okay, so it has a map of every function and what other functions it calls, but that graph is still huge. How does it know what to show the AI?
This is where it gets really clever. It runs a PageRank algorithm on that graph.
PageRank, like the original algorithm Larry Page and Sergey Brin built for Google search.
The exact same mathematical principle. Google's PageRank determines the importance of a web page by counting the number and quality of links pointing to it. Ader does this with code. It looks at the files you are currently editing or discussing in your prompt. It treats those files as the starting nodes. Then it uses PageRank to find the most important related files. If a core database utility file is imported by 50 different controllers, it gets a massive PageRank score. If a random CSS file is only imported once, it gets a low score.
PageRank for code, that is just elegant.
It then compresses this ranked graph into a highly concise text map. Crucially, it only shows the model the signatures of the relevant functions, the names, the parameters, the return types, along with their doc strings. It strips out the actual implementation logic inside the functions, the result of this architecture. Ader takes that initial 1.2 million tokens and drops the context usage down to roughly 5,000 to 15,000 tokens. That is a 98% reduction in context size.
A 98% drop. That is the difference between an unviable product and a wildly profitable one. And it gives the AI structural awareness without burning tokens on implementation details. So if I asked Ader to add JWT authentication to an app, the repo map instantly shows the AI exactly which controller, service, and config files are related and what the function signatures look like, without making the AI read the actual loops and if statements inside those files.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you can see the genuine tension between these three approaches. They represent fundamentally different beliefs about how artificial intelligence should interact with human systems. Claude Code says, the model is smart enough, let it search freely with basic tools. Open Code says, the model is prone to hallucination, guide it strictly with deterministic compiler diagnostics. Ader says, the model gets easily distracted, give it a highly compressed, pre-calculated architectural map.
And smart engineers disagree vehemently on which is best, because they're optimizing for entirely different things. Claude Code is fantastic for creative, exploratory tasks where you don't even know what you're looking for. Open Code is brilliant for surgical, type-safe edits in strict languages like Rust or TypeScript. Ader is unmatched for navigating massive, unfamiliar enterprise repositories cheaply and efficiently.
Precisely. And this debate isn't just academic. It dictates how millions of dollars of compute are spent every day.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Reading code, mapping dependencies, finding the bug that is only half the battle, how do you get the AI to actually edit the file without destroying it? Because anyone who has ever copy-pasted code from ChatGPT knows that models are notoriously lazy. They mess up the indentation, they randomly change variable names, or the worst offense, they just replace your entire complex sorting algorithm with a comment that says /insert rest of logic here.
You've just identified what is widely considered the most fragile, frustrating part of the entire agent loop. The edit strategy. How do you map the conceptual reasoning of the LLM back into a physical, character-perfect string replacement on the file system? Let's talk about the line number trap.
Oh, yes. The line number trap. Yeah. I have lived this nightmare. Why are LLMs so incredibly terrible at counting?
It comes down to their fundamental architecture. We talked about tokens earlier. LLMs do not process text as individual characters, and they certainly don't process text as lines. They process chunks of characters, sometimes a whole word, sometimes just a syllable. They do not have an innate spatial awareness of a file. If you provide a tool that requires the LLM to specify, edit lines 42 through 56, you are asking a system that doesn't understand lines to guess where a block of code lives.
And they always guess wrong. I've watched agents try to update a div on line 42. But because they previously added two lines of imports at the top of the file, the div is now on line 44. The agent blindly deletes lines 42 through 56, effectively erasing half my database connection logic instead of the UI component. It corrupts the code.
Exactly. Relying on line numbers is a recipe for catastrophic file corruption. So if line numbers are out, how do you do it? The sources outline a few competing strategies. Claude Code uses exact string replacement. The harness tells the model, do not give me line numbers, give me the exact string of code you want to replace, character for character, and the exact new string to put in its place.
That sounds safer. Models are generally good at outputting exact text if you prompt them correctly.
It works well in theory, but consider the edge cases. What if the string the model targets is incredibly common? What if it targets the string return true? The harness searches the file, finds that return true exists in 15 different functions, and the edit completely fails because the harness doesn't know which one the model meant to replace.
Right. It lacks uniqueness. And then there's Ader. Ader had a massive industry-shifting breakthrough on benchmarks with their edit strategy. They discovered something fascinating. The specific format you ask an AI to write code in can completely change its accuracy and its personality.
Right.
They switched to using standard unified diffs.
The UDIF format. For the listeners, this is the exact format that Git diff outputs in your terminal when you check what changes you've made. It shows a few lines of context above and below the edit, lines starting with a minus sign for the code being deleted, and lines starting with a plus sign for the new code being added. When Ader switched their prompt to ask GPT-4 Turbo to output these unified diffs instead of just JSON blocks or raw text, the results were staggering. The model became 3 times less lazy. The score on the SWE bench, the hardest software engineering benchmark, jumped from 20% to 61%.
3 times less lazy. That is an unbelievable performance leap just from changing the output format. Why does the formatting matter so much to the model's psychology, for lack of a better word? It's the exact same neural network.
It all comes back to the pre-training data. We have to remember what these models actually are. They are statistical mirrors of the internet. They are trained on millions of open source GitHub repositories. That training data includes millions of highly scrutinized Git commits and professional pull requests. When you ask the model to output a unified diff, you are mathematically triggering a pattern in its weights associated with rigorous professional software engineering. It adopts the persona of a meticulous open source contributor submitting a patch to the Linux kernel.
Wow.
Conversely, if you just ask it for a JSON block or plain text, it falls back into the statistical patterns of a conversational chatbot answering a question on Reddit or Stack Overflow, where it gets lazy, summarizes, and leaves placeholders.
That is wild. You are literally tricking the model into a higher tier professional persona just by forcing it to use the syntax of a professional. But the sources also mention that even with UDIFs, Ader has to be incredibly flexible when applying these diffs, right? Because the model still isn't perfect. It might miss a space or get the indentation slightly wrong.
It requires extreme flexibility. Ader employs what they call a 9-level fallback chain for applying diffs. The harness doesn't just blindly apply the patch. It tries an exact character-perfect match first. If the file has changed slightly and that fails, it drops down to level 2, a white space insensitive match. If that fails, it tries preserving the core indentation but ignoring trailing spaces. Then it tries fuzzy matching using the Levenshtein distance algorithm to find the closest similar block of code. If that fails, it tries breaking the massive diff into smaller individual sub-hunks and applying them one by one.
It tries 9 different programmatic ways to forcefully patch the file. It's like trying to fit a puzzle piece by gently tapping it, then pushing it, then finally just hitting it with a hammer.
Yes. And the developer notes in the sources reveal just how crucial this is. Disabling this flexible patching fallback chain causes a 9x increase in editing errors. The model simply isn't accurate enough on its own. The edit strategy is an exercise in defense-in-depth engineering. The harness is constantly covering for the LLM's spatial clumsiness.
Now, Cursor, the immensely popular AI code editor, takes a totally different approach to this code surgery problem. They don't rely on 9-level fuzzy matching. They use a 2-stage split. The architect and the editor.
This is a brilliant optimization of both cognitive capability and API cost. Cursor recognized that figuring out what to code is a high-level reasoning task, but figuring out how to format the diff is a low-level clerical task. So they separate the reasoning from the formatting. They use one very expensive, highly capable frontier model like Claude 3.5 Sonnet or OpenAI's O1 Preview to act as the architect.
The architect does the hard thinking.
Exactly. The architect sketches the logic. It might output raw pseudocode, a rough draft of the changes, or even just a detailed bulleted list of what needs to happen. It doesn't worry about exact formatting, indentation, or strict diff syntax. Then, Cursor takes that high-level sketch and hands it to a second, much cheaper, heavily fine-tuned, and extremely fast model called the Apply model, or the editor.
So you basically have a junior developer typing up the senior developer's whiteboard sketch.
That is the perfect analogy. This cheaper model's only job is to look at the architect's sketch, look at the original file in the editor, and generate the perfect character-by-character text replacement to integrate the change cleanly.
So you get the massive brains and reasoning power of the expensive model to solve the complex bug, but you don't waste its precious expensive tokens struggling with indentation and diff formats.
Mm.
You let the cheap, specialized, sub-second model handle the manual labor of actually applying the patch to the document.
It is a concrete implementation of routing cognitive tasks to appropriately sized models.
Mm.
We see variations of this everywhere in the sources. LangChain refers to this pattern as the reasoning sandwich maximum reasoning for the initial planning, cheat fast models for the implementation steps, and then maximum reasoning again at the end for verification.
So what does this all mean for the developers building these tools? We've discussed all these incredibly complex strategies, LSP, diagnostic integrations, tree-sitter repo maps, nine-level fuzzy matching fallback chains, architect-editor dual model splits. It feels like the industry is sprinting towards maximum complexity. But then I read the Vercel case study in the sources, and it threw me for a complete loop. Let's talk about the simplification paradox.
The Vercel case study is a fascinating, almost humorous counterpoint to all this architectural complexity. Vercel was building an internal AI agent called D0 to understand and query their own complex data layer. Initially, following industry best practices, they built a highly structured, complex harness. They gave the agent deeply specialized, custom-built tools. Get entity joins, load catalogs, search schema, syntax validator.
They basically built a custom, bespoke API just for the agent to use to query their data architecture. Here are the exact levers you're allowed to pull.
And it was an absolute nightmare to maintain. The sources note that every edge case required the Vercel engineers to write a new patch for the tool. The agent would get confused by the strict parameters of the custom tools. The success rate of the agent successfully answering a data question plateaued at 80%. It couldn't get any better. So out of frustration, they did something radical. They deleted 80% of the tools. They stripped the agent down to a single, terrifyingly broad tool, execute arbitrary Unix bash commands.
Wait, they threw away the custom API and just gave the AI bash, cat, grep, and else?
Yes. They handed it the keys to the shell and the result. The success rate jumped from 80% to a flawless 100%. The agent became 3.5 times faster at arriving at the answer, and it used 37% fewer tokens.
That is the simplification paradox, addition by subtraction.
But hold on, I have to push back here. If I just give an AI raw batch access in my production environment, isn't that a massive security risk? What if it hallucinates and runs ARM HRF and deletes the entire repository? And beyond security, why did removing all those helpful specialized tools actually make the model perform better?
The security aspect is handled by running the agent in a heavily sandboxed, ephemeral Docker container where destructive commands don't matter. But to answer your second question about performance, it comes down, once again, to the training data. Frontier models have been trained extensively on decades of internet-era developer workflows. They have read billions of lines of bash scripts. They are intimately familiar with standard Unix tools. When Vercel forced the model to use their custom get entity joins tool, the model had to learn a proprietary undocumented ATI on the fly within its context window. When they took the guardrails off and just gave it bash, the model was free to navigate the file system the exact same way a human analyst would. It used tools it already fundamentally mathematically understood. Every specialized tool is a choice you are making for the model. You are forcing it into your mental framework. And sometimes, you just need to get out of the way and let the statistical engine do what it does best. But the sources give a huge, blinking red light caveat here. This simplification paradox only worked for Vercel because they had what they called a pristine semantic layer. Their YAML files and markdown documentation were perfectly organized. If you unleash an agent with just grep into a messy, undocumented legacy code base from 2004, it's not going to miraculously fix it.
The phrase used in the sources is that in a messy code base, giving the agent raw bash will just result in faster bad queries. This brings up an emerging discipline that I find truly fascinating. It's called agent legible engineering. Human developers are increasingly spending their time preparing the environment, writing meticulously clear documentation, enforcing strict naming conventions across the codebase, building clean, logical architectural boundaries. But they aren't doing this for other human developers. They're doing it so the codebase is easily navigable by an autonomous agent.
You are literally optimizing your code so the robot can read it better. We are formatting our work for the machines.
It is a profound shift. We are no longer just writing software. We are cultivating environments for agents to operate within.
So we finally managed to trick the AI into making a perfect surgical edit using UDIFFs. We built an agent-legible environment where it can find the files using Bash. The bug is fixed. But in the real world, developers don't just fix one bug, commit the code, and go home. They work for 8 hours. They build massive features. How does the agent keep up when its context window inevitably fills up after 20 minutes of furious terminal commands?
This is the fundamental existential challenge of long-running agents: the illusion of infinite memory. If an agent runs for 3 hours, taking hundreds of actions, reading dozens of files, the context window eventually hits its hard limit, say 200,000 tokens. When the context window runs out, the API rejects the request, the session terminates. If you start a new session, the agent wakes up with total amnesia. It has no idea what it just spent 3 hours doing. It doesn't know what it broke, what it fixed, or what the ultimate goal was.
So how do harnesses fake infinite memory? How do they keep the agent moving forward?
The first, most common technique is called context compaction.
Squishing the memory.
Essentially, yes. In Claude code, the harness constantly monitors the token count. When the conversation history hits roughly 92% of the model's maximum context limit, the harness pauses the core React loop. It performs a two-pass operation to shrink the prompt. First, it does a brutal pruning. It clears out older, bulky tool outputs like massive 10,000-line terminal logs from a failed test run that aren't immediately relevant anymore. If that pruning isn't enough to get under the limit, it takes the older chunks of the conversation history and asks the model to generate a highly dense summary of what happened. It replaces the long, detailed history with this short paragraph summary.
But wait, if it summarizes everything, doesn't it lose important, granular instructions? If I told it an hour ago, make sure the button is hex code hashtag FF5733, and that gets compressed into user-requested UI updates, the agent is going to hallucinate the color later.
It absolutely can. That is the danger of compaction. You lose high-fidelity details. Which is exactly why the Claude code harness violently re-injects that clawu.md file fresh at the very bottom of the prompt after every single compaction. It guarantees that the core architectural rules survive the memory wipe. But Anthropic discovered that even with compaction and the markdown file, an agent trying to build a whole complex application in one continuous session would eventually lose the plot. It would try to one-shot a massive feature, run out of context, get confused by its own summaries, and leave the code base in a half-broken, uncompilable state for the next session to inherit.
It's like a developer pulling an all-nighter, getting delirious, and just making things worse. So how did Anthropic solve this delirium? They looked at how human engineers work in shifts, right? If I take over a project from you at 5 p.m., I need a handover log. I need to know what you did, what's broken, and what to do next. And Anthropic built this exact human behavior into the harness using what they creatively call the Ralph Wiggum loop.
I appreciate the Simpsons reference they used in their internal documentation. The solution to the amnesia problem was twofold. First, they introduced an initializer agent. The very first time you prompt the system for a large, multi-hour project, this initial agent doesn't write any product code. It doesn't touch the React components. It sets up the scaffolding. It writes an init.sh script to run the dev server and the test suite. Most importantly, it creates a claude-progress.txt file, which acts as the official handover log, and it makes an initial git commit.
It built its own breadcrumb trail before it even starts walking into the forest.
Then the harness switches to the coding agent. This agent is strictly instructed to only work on one small sub-feature at a time. When its session inevitably ends, either because it hit a token limit or completed the subtask, it pauses, writes a detailed, granular update into the claude-progress.txt file, detailing exactly what works and what doesn't, and it commits its work to Git. When the next agent session wakes up with complete amnesia, the very first thing the harness forces it to do is read the progress file, check the recent Git logs to see the diffs, and run the init.sh script to test the server. It instantly knows exactly where to pick up.
It's treating the physical file system as its long-term memory. It doesn't need an expensive vector database. It just uses Git and a text file. It's so elegant. But this concept of swapping out agents leads to a massive ongoing architectural debate right now. Single agent versus multi-agent systems. We touched on this briefly, but looking at the sources, this is really dividing the community.
If we look at the current marketplace, Windsurf and Augment Code represent the two opposing sides of this intense debate. Windsurf believes fundamentally in the power of a single, highly persistent, omnipresent agent. Their underlying engine, called Cascade, monitors your every move as a developer. It tracks what files you open in the editor, what text you copy to your clipboard, where your cursor is resting, and what terminal commands you run. It tries to build a continuous flow state by keeping a single agent deeply contextually aware of everything happening in real time.
It wants to be the smartest single collaborator sitting right next to you watching your screen. But then there's Augment Code and their new workspace feature called Intent. They take the multi-agent approach. They don't want a sidekick. They want a development team.
Augment's Intent acts much more like a senior project manager. Instead of relying on one agent trying to frantically hold everything in its head and monitor your cursor, Intent orchestrates multiple specialist agents asynchronously. You give it a massive goal. It creates a living specification document. Then it spins up entirely isolated Git work trees. It might send one agent to refactor the database schema in one work tree while simultaneously dispatching another agent to update the front-end API calls in a separate work tree, all running in parallel.
So they don't step on each other's toes modifying the same files at the same time. It sounds incredibly powerful. You get a whole team of developers working for you simultaneously. But the sources note a real palpable tension here with actual human developers. Some developers find managing multiple parallel agents mentally exhausting.
It represents a profound shift in the daily cognitive workflow of a developer. A fascinating anecdote in the sources from a developer on Hacker News described juggling parallel multi-agent systems as way more tiring than a single agent workflow. They noted that managing a single cursor or Windsurf instance is plenty enough to babysit. When you use multi-agent systems, your job inherently shifts from writing code to acting as a tech lead. You are constantly reviewing parallel pull requests from your AI subordinates, resolving merge conflicts between their work trees, and trying to keep a mental map of what five different instances are doing. It requires a completely different and often more draining cognitive load.
You stop being a builder and you become a manager. And nobody gets into programming because they want to be a manager. And speaking of human behavior and how we interact with these tools, Anthropic published a fascinating telemetry study in the sources on how developers actually interact with these agents in the wild. They analyzed millions of human-agent interactions, and they found a massive counterintuitive contradiction in how experienced developers use Claude Code compared to junior developers.
The data on user eponymy is incredibly revealing about human trust and system design. Claude Code, by default, asks the human for permission before taking destructive or consequential actions like running a bash script, executing a test, or pushing to Git. You have to explicitly approve it. Anthropic found that new users, people with under 50 coding sessions, auto-approve actions only about 20% of the time. They are highly cautious. They micromanage every single step. But as users gain experience and hit 750 sessions or more, their auto-approve rate doubles to over 40%. They let the agent run wild.
But here is the contradiction that blew my mind. Even though experienced devs use the auto-approve feature twice as often, they actually interrupt the agent more often. The manual interrupt rate hitting CTRLC to kill the process goes up from 5% to 9% as users gain experience. How does that make sense? They trust the agent enough to let it run autonomously, but they hit the panic button to stop it nearly twice as often.
It reflects a complete maturation in oversight strategy. Consider the junior developer. They approve every single action sequentially. Yes, read the file. Yes, run grep. Yes, edit the line. Because they are gatekeeping every single microstep, the agent never has a chance to gain momentum and go down a wrong path. Therefore, they never need to hit the panic button to interrupt it mid-execution.
Right. They're holding the leash so tight the dog can't run away.
Exactly. Consider the alternative. Senior developers change their strategy entirely. They turn on auto-approve and let the agent sprint. They drop the leash. But because they are highly experienced engineers with deep intuition, they monitor the scrolling terminal output like a hawk. The second they see the agent running a flawed recursive grep command that is going to search node modules for 20 minutes, or they see it getting stuck in a while true loop trying to fix a pedantic linter error that doesn't matter for the prototype, they actively yank the steering wheel. They interrupt the agent, type a quick correction like ignore the linter, just focus on the API and let it sprint again. They move from micromanagement to macro supervision.
They treat the AI like an eager but unpredictable intern. Go fast, run the tests, but the minute you do something stupid, I'm cutting you off. It really highlights that effective AI oversight doesn't mean clicking approve 500 times a day. It means having the visibility and the intuition to intervene only when it matters. But humans aren't the only ones stopping the work, are they?
No, and this is perhaps one of the most important safety properties discussed in the Anthropic research. It is a metric called agent-initiated stops. Anthropic found that on complex multi-step tasks, Claude Code pauses to ask the user for clarification more than twice as often as human users interrupt Claude.
The AI is stopping itself. It's raising its own hand.
The model has been explicitly heavily trained to recognize its own uncertainty. If a user provides a vague prompt, or if the agent explores the architecture and realizes it lacks the necessary credentials to access a production database, it doesn't just guess. It doesn't hallucinate a destructive action to try and please the user. It explicitly pauses the React loop, breaks out of the cycle, and asks the user a clarifying question. The data shows that as the complexity of the user's goal increases, Claude's self-initiated stops increase much faster than human-initiated interruptions.
That is such a crucial feature for building trust. You want the system to raise its hand when it's confused, not just barrel forward and delete your production database because it misread a vague instruction. And speaking of production databases, the telemetry data showed exactly where these agents are actually being deployed. We always assume it's just software engineering making websites and apps.
Software engineering still dominates the usage statistics. It accounts for nearly 50% of the agentic activity on Anthropic's public API. But the data shows massive emerging usage in highly regulated sectors like healthcare, finance, and cybersecurity. The researchers plotted these millions of tool calls on a matrix measuring risk versus autonomy.
And most of it is low risk, right? I mean, most of it is low risk.
The vast majority is low risk and highly reversible things like editing a local code file, formatting a CSV data set, or running local unit tests. If it messes up, you just hit undo. Only 0.8% of the analyzed actions appeared to be completely irreversible, like sending an email to a live customer or triggering a webhook. But the researchers did identify growing clusters of activity at the extreme high end of both risk and autonomy.
What kind of activity are we talking about at the extreme high end?
Things like autonomously executing live cryptocurrency trades based on real-time market data analysis, retrieving and processing live patient medical records, and conducting autonomous red team privilege escalation attacks in cybersecurity environments. Now, Anthropic is careful to note they can't see the full downstream context of these API calls. Many of these might be simulated evaluations running in sandboxes, or they might have human reviewers further down the pipeline before execution. But it definitively proves that the frontier of what agents are being asked to do is expanding rapidly into highly sensitive real-world domains.
It's moving way beyond just generating autocomplete suggestions for a React component in your IDE. We are trusting these harnesses to orchestrate complex multi-step operations in the physical and financial world.
Which brings us to the ultimate synthesis of all this research. The magic of the AI coding tools we use daily is not just the large language model. The LLM is increasingly becoming a commodity. It is simply the raw cognitive engine, the CPU, the real competitive moat, the thing that separates a frustrating, lazy chatbot from a 10x virtual engineer that you can trust with your architecture is context engineering.
Context engineering. That is the phrase of the day.
It is the harness. It is the thousands of deliberate architectural decisions about exactly what pieces of code the model is allowed to see. It is how that code is filtered through tree sitter, AST maps, or LSP diagnostics to remove the noise. It is how the model is mathematically coerced into typing back into the file system using unified diffs to trigger a professional persona. And it is how its memory is compacted and passed down through handover logs across hours of continuous execution. The model that sees the right code at the exact right time in the exact right format wins the benchmark. Everything else is just plumbing.
Okay, let's unpack this for the listener, because this is a real practical application of all this knowledge. The next time you fire up your IDE tomorrow morning and you type a prompt and you see that little terminal spinner saying, thinking, you are not going to see magic anymore. You are going to see the machinery. You'll know that the harness just built a massive JSON schema behind your back. You'll know it's checking the KV cache, hoping the prefix matches so it can save you money. You'll know it's running a grep command, hitting a syntax error, getting aggressively scolded by the language server protocol, compressing its own memory because it hit 92% capacity, relying on a markdown file to remember what it's doing, and trying again using a 9-level fuzzy matching fallback chain all in the blink of an eye. You now know exactly how the trick is done.
And yet, knowing how the trick is done doesn't make it any less impressive. In fact, understanding the extreme fragility of the edit strategies and the immense complexity of the context management makes you appreciate just how remarkable it is when the agent works flawlessly and fixes your bug. But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final, deeply provocative thought from the sources to mull over.
Oh, lay it on us. What's the final twist?
We talked earlier about Anthropic's Claude Code, and how the core loop is incredibly lean, just 50 lines of code. But the sources reveal a mind-bending detail about the development of that harness itself. Anthropic noted that 90% of the entire code base for the Claude Code harness was actually written by Claude.
Wait, 90% of the tool was written by the tool?
The agent was used to write the operating system that runs the agent. It is recursive self-improvement in literal practice. And this raises a profound question. What happens to software development when the operating system managing the AI is continuously optimizing, refactoring, and rewriting its own rules while it runs? When the harness realizes its own edit strategy is inefficient and autonomously pushes a patch to improve its own core loop, we are rapidly approaching the point where the architecture of autonomy is entirely self-sustaining.
That is both exhilarating and slightly terrifying. The tool is building the tool and the abstraction layer getting thicker. Well, that is all the time we have for today's deep dive. We have peeled back the layers of the harness from the React loops to the repo maps and explored the competing philosophies driving the future of software engineering. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey into the black box. Until next time, keep coding, keep questioning, and maybe keep a very close eye on what your agent is actually doing in that terminal. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. Farewell.